Hello, hello, and welcome to this exciting episode of Skeptics and Seekers Sunday Sermon Supplemental. This is 5S. I'm David Johnson. Let's get started. And I just want to be brief with this one. My intention is for this to last less than 5 minutes, which means it's probably going to go about 30 minutes, but I'm actually going to try to keep it down because I don't have a lot of time. I'm starting a new 9-to-5. Don't ask me what I'm doing or where I'm working or whatever. It's a state job. That's all I'll tell you. So I'm looking forward to that. Mostly, I'm looking forward to the benefits. It's actually a pay decrease for me in some ways. But in 90 days, all those lovely, lovely state benefits matters because as you get older, the benefits become more important than the paycheck. So, I'm at that state where I'm rounding that corner. So, that's me, a traditional 9-to-5, 5 days a week. And I'm looking forward to that nice, consistent schedule of doing things that aren't very challenging. And it's the state, baby. So that said, you know, I won't have as much time to do, the projects that I care about. I'm going to have to put red letters on a, longer hiatus. I originally wrote the write-up, If Not for Paul, as a red letters episode, and I realized I didn't have time to do it. So I just put it up, and I've got a feeling that that's going to be the case for a while. Also, when I do return with Red Letters, I plan to put everyone, all of the remaining members, on the free tier, and I'm going to remove the pay tiers altogether because Patreon, I haven't actually looked into this carefully, but I got an email from them a month or so ago. Patreon has introduced a free tier, and I am going to make Red Letters free. So if you are signed up in my Red Letters, you can stay signed up. You're not going to be charged ever again. But when I blast an email notification to Red Letters, you will get that and you'll know exactly what to do if you want to move over to the free tier. Or if you just want to say, hey, you know, I'm done. Thanks for all the fish. That's fine too. Because what I want to do is make this content available to as many people as possible. And I also want to give people who listen to Skeptics and Seekers and who participate in Skeptics and Seekers the opportunity to support that endeavor with, you know, voluntary donations. So if you want to, you know, just volunteer some money, which is good because I drink coffee and I need coffee money and I have a mortgage and I need mortgage money. One of those two things is more important. It's helpful. It's, but I'm not charging you for it. So I just want to be clear about that. This is a hobby of mine. I would do it whether I got paid or not, which, you know, I have been for all this time, but it does help, to keep the lights on and the studio ticking along. So I'm just going to make it easy for people. If they want to give a one-time donation or a regular donation, that's fine. That's up to you. That is between you, me, and God. One of those three doesn't matter. So I'll just make that easy. And for those who would like to follow, but who do not want to make a donation to get all of the things that I put on the internet, that's going to be possible too. So that's my plans. I've already exceeded my 2 minutes and I'm probably well on my way to 5 minutes right now. I don't have a clock going. That's a mistake. So I want to get into this. I want to talk about one aspect of the write-up I did. It's something that I wanted to spend a little bit more time with the write-up, but it was already 3,000 words. And attention spans these days, am I right? So you'll see in the write-up, there's a section called the Lord's Supper. And underneath that section, foot washing. When I wrote this originally, my first draft had the Lord's Supper and foot washing together in one heading, Lord's Supper and foot washing. I had some things to say about it, but once again, for the sake of time, I didn't, and I broke them up for the sake of clarity, because I wasn't going to go into this aspect of it. So I'm going to touch on it right now, the Lord's Supper and foot washing, and what is so interesting about these things. I'll just jump right into it. There's no mystery. The Synoptic Gospels, I might sometimes refer to as Mark's Gospel, because Mark was the first of the Gospel writers, as far as we know. And the other Synoptic writers, Matthew and Luke, cribbed the vast majority of what Mark had to say, and they changed little bits of it here and there. Some of it, they just, you know, just they just copied and pasted. But a lot of it, they copied and pasted and then edited it a little bit to tell their own stories. But it was very clear that they were working off of Mark as footnotes. And so if Matthew, Mark, and Luke were in class, Mark would get an A on his paper, and Matthew and Luke would get an F because they substantially ripped off Mark's work. And so that said, I might sometimes refer to the Synoptic Gospels as Mark's Gospel, but just know that in this context, I mean the same thing, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So there is an interesting feature about Mark's Gospel as opposed to John's Gospel. There are a lot of differences between the Synoptics and John. But this one is big, and you don't hear it discussed very much. It's huge. It's major. It's fundamental and central to the Christian faith. And so it is a little weird that you don't hear this discussed. The Lord's Supper, the institution of the Lord's Supper, is found only in the Synoptics. This is perhaps the most important ritual in the Christian church. John doesn't have it. Now, interestingly, we really learn about the institution from Paul. Paul is the first to institute this. In fact, after I post this, or when I post this podcast, I'll amend the write-up, and I'll just add some notes at the end of the write-up. I'm actually going to do it this time. I really mean it. And I'm going to include some links for you to read if you want to do some further research on this. Some of this is Catholic sources, but I think you'll find the sources useful and relevant, excuse me, to what I'm saying. Paul is actually the first one to mention the institution of the Lord's Supper. It's not Luke. You don't find it in Acts. Now, Acts was written well after Paul's writings, but still, you don't actually find it in Acts. It's not there. Paul doesn't mention it in the book of Romans. It's not there. It's not mentioned in any of his other letters, at least not that I can think of at the top of my head. It's not written in the fake Peter's, 1st and 2nd Peter. It's not mentioned in the John's, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. It's not mentioned in James. Peter, James, and John, the pillars of the church, they never mention it. You know, writings about Peter, James, not so much John in the book of Acts, never mentioned. The book of Hebrews, not mentioned. Revelations, obviously, not mentioned. The first mention we get of it historically is Paul. Now, take that in for a moment. I'm going to get back to what I was saying about the Synoptics and John, but this is very important. Paul doesn't say, according to the pillars of the church, the Lord's Supper was instituted. And on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took bread. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, according to history that is readily available to everyone, on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took bread. He doesn't say any of that. He says, as I have received of the Lord. Which is really interesting. It's really interesting because it assumes that the Corinthians have never heard this before. It assumes that they didn't know anything about it. Now, one would think that they would know something about it, this properly established church. But Paul doesn't cite any source that they would have heard of. Paul cites special revelation as I have received from the Lord. I got this directly from Jesus. I didn't get it from Peter. I didn't get it from Paul. I didn't get it from history. I didn't get it from your traditions. As I received of the Lord. I find that really fascinating that the first mention of this ritual comes from a special revelation that I am just going to go out on a limb and say Paul made up. He didn't receive anything from the Lord. But that's how he introduces it. He doesn't say, as we can intuit from Scripture. And he does a lot of that, you know, according to Scripture. He says that a lot. Not for the Lord's Supper. For this, he received of the Lord. And so we can intuit from this that Paul is giving them a ritual that he thinks heretofore the Corinthians have never heard of. Now, isn't that weird? Because Peter, James, and John, if this Lord's Supper thing actually happened the way the synoptics talk about it, Peter, James, and John would have instituted it properly in all the churches. It would have been the central thing in all of the churches. They would have known exactly what elements to use, when to use them, how to use them, but they didn't. In fact, historically, before probably the third century, the Lord's Supper was just a common fellowship meal. I have myself worshiped at churches that had a fellowship meal every week after the morning service. Fellowship meals are not common, not uncommon among Christians. In most of the churches that I attended, there was at least either a once a month or once every fifth Sunday fellowship meal that would happen with a group of churches. There were all kinds of fellowship meal opportunities in churches. And it seems like this is a fairly old tradition. In fact, it's a very human tradition. People who form groups often express that group unity and loyalty in the form of some kind of fellowship meal. All right. Much of the dining that we do in America and around the world is in the context of fellowship with people who are in our in-group. It's not merely an act of, oh, I'm hungry, so I need to go eat. It's a matter of fellowship and solidarity. So fellowship meals, not uncommon. And that's what they were having. In fact, in the gospel texts, Jesus introduces the Lord's Supper in the context of a meal. It was the Passover. It was the Passover meal. Jesus could have introduced this at any time, you know, when there wasn't a meal. If he didn't want it to be a meal, he could have just introduced it out of the blue when they weren't having a meal. Here's the bread. Here's the cup. This is my body. This is my blood. Drink it in remembrance of me. Do it on Sundays, not Saturdays, like we're doing now. Do it every week, not like we're doing now. He could have given all kinds of instructions for this. This is how much bread to use. This is these are the drinks that you can use, and this is how much you should use. And this he could have given those instructions. He doesn't do any of that. In fact, he just takes the existing Passover that they were doing, a Jewish meal. Once again, Jesus could have done this outside of the text of Jewish culture. He takes this Jewish thing and he just adds on a couple of elements at the end. In fact, those elements would have already been a part of the meal. It's not like Jesus had to go do something special. He just takes a couple of things that are there and he gives them a special symbolic meaning. So if we're going to intuit anything from the Gospels, and if we're going to assume that these events happened before Paul wrote, then you should assume that the Lord's Supper should be done in the context of a Passover feast. And it should be done as often as the Passover was done. That's what you should intuit from the Lord's Supper. That is not what we, in fact, intuit from the Lord's Supper. And when the Christians were meeting with their fellowship meal, it wasn't a Passover. Not at all. In fact, it was just a weekly fellowship meal. That's not what Jesus instituted at all. And so it seems to me that the early church knew nothing about the proper institution of the Lord's Supper. The first time we hear about it, it's 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Isn't that interesting? And I think that Paul was just trying to address a problem, because there was a problem. Right? There was a huge problem. The fellowship meal at the church of Corinth had gotten a little bit out of hand. And these weren't Jews, at least Jews by birth. You know, they may have been, you know, some of the diaspora Jews were being brought in. I'm not going to go through all that again, but they weren't Jews by tradition and culture. And so they may have been modeling their fellowship meal off of Greco-Roman banquets, which is kind of what it sounds like anyway. And Paul was very upset about that. And it would have made sense for him to say, no, you should base this meal on the Passover, because these were not Jews by culture. So they probably didn't know much about the Passover anyway. And so what Paul does is he reins this out of control banquet in. He reins it in and he says, look, you're having this banquet and it's actually more hurtful than helpful. So here's the context that I want you to do it. I received this special message from the Lord. So listen to me. Once again, anytime a preacher starts saying, yeah, I got this directly from Jesus, you can shut him off. The Corinthians probably should have shut him off. And it sounds like they did actually shut him off, because they didn't. It doesn't seem historically like anybody followed this advice. But Paul says, no, not a banquet meal. You can eat at home, which is an interesting thing, because it was house churches. They were eating at home. And so I think it's probably better to translate that as you can eat when you're not meeting together in this church assembly type thing. Right. So what was happening in these house churches, these meals were getting a little bit out of hand, maybe a little bit rowdy. They were divisive. And so Paul says, here's what Jesus told me. He said this to his apostles, and on the night he was betrayed, you know, he took bread and he said, this is my body. He took the wine, said, this is my body. You notice that Paul doesn't talk about the Passover feast here at all. So he talks about this as kind of a separate institution, and to say, so this is how I want you to do it for now on. Now, I'm not saying that he's got bad motives here. He's an evangelist who's trying to deal with a problem in one of his churches, right? So he does what lots of evangelists do, and this is where he goes wrong, in my opinion. He says, God told me to do this. and I think he invents an institution that simply nobody heard of. Nobody had heard of this institution. Yes, there were fellowship meals, but nobody heard of the thing as Paul was describing it, and as we understand it today. And so Paul says, yeah, Jesus told me this, and he told me about this thing that he did. And I think that Mark just took that pronouncement of Paul and wrote it into his narrative. And then Matthew and Luke picked it up, right? So I see no reason to believe that this happened in AD 30-ish, because if it had, then Peter, James, and John would have taught this in all the churches, because they were there, right? They would have known exactly what the Lord's Supper was, exactly how it was supposed to be instituted, exactly how important it was, and yet it seems no churches knew anything about the proper institution of the Lord's Supper. I think Paul made it up, and the gospel writers wrote it in. All right, it's a type of euhemerization. Look it up. I think I said it right. So back to the synoptics. Okay. So Mark's gospel has this story. But Mark was not one of the people who was there. Neither was Luke. And we're just going to give Matthew, I would say neither was this person calling himself Matthew, but let's just say that Matthew was there, but Mark and Luke weren't there. So who were the eyewitnesses to this in the Gospels? Well, that would be Matthew and John. And John wrote later, probably much later than Matthew. He was one of the latest entrants into the New Testament, and certainly the latest of the Gospels. So John would have known, assuming that, you know, these documents were in broad enough circulation. That's an assumption. I don't even know that to be a fact, but let's go with that. John would have known what Matthew wrote. He would have known what Mark wrote. He would have known what Luke wrote. But apparently John's memory did not include that scene. And you've got to bear in mind, the church would have been going on for decades by the time John writes. John knows what the church is doing. He knows that the church is not having any proper institution of the Lord's Supper. And yet in his writings, he does not mention it. We don't get the institution of the Lord's Supper until maybe a couple of centuries later. All right. Check out the sources. Before this starts happening anywhere close to the way we do it. So John knows this, and he was there, supposedly, when it was instituted. And yet in the Gospels, where other people talk about this thing, John leaves it out. In fact, John changes the story altogether to not include the Lord's Supper. This is very important. You can't just say that, well, John saw the others and he decided it was covered. No, he doesn't do that. He actually tells the story, but he changes the story and removes the Lord's Supper. He removes it completely and replaces it with something else. Do you mind if I read a little bit of Bible to you? I mind. Guess I really hate doing this. And yet, here I am about to do this. I thought that I had this, you know, all queued up and ready to go. I could edit this, but I'm not gonna. So bear with me just a second. Got this in my notes here. We go. It's kind of a long reading, but I think it's worth it. You guys know how much I hate reading this stuff. Let me adjust the size of my print. All right. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, this is John 13, that he would depart from the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, this is we're in one of the world's longest run sentences, having put in the heart of Judas Iscariot, here, let me just interrupt myself for a moment. Here, Judas is not so much making a decision. The devil has tinkered with Judas's heart, his mind, his resolve and opinions. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, it's a side discussion. The devil had already put in the heart of Judas, the son of Simon, to betray him. Jesus, knowing that the Father had handed all things over to him and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, go up from supper and laid his outer garments aside, and he took a towel and tied it around himself. Okay, so that's one paragraph. Most of that being one sentence. That's one paragraph. And we've set the scene. This is the same scene as others do the Lord's Supper. And so we see a new detail. Jesus takes off his outer garments, and he puts a towel around himself. This is the moment, you think. This is the moment where John is going to give us the most important institution of all time, the Eucharist. He is about to concur with Mark, Luke, and Matthew. Except he doesn't. Verse 5, then he poured water into a basin and began washing the disciples' feet and wiping them with the towel which he had around himself. Wait a minute. That's not the Lord's Supper. In fact, let me just go back through Mark, Matthew, and Luke. They don't have this scene at all. There's no foot washing. They have the Lord's Supper. But in Luke, there's no Lord's Supper. We have foot washing. Let's read. Maybe I'm missing something. I'm not. Verse 6. So he came to Simon Peter. He said to him, Lord, you are washing my feet? And Jesus answered and said to him, what I am doing, you do not realize right now, but you will understand later. By the way, I don't think he ever did. Peter said to him, never shall you wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash your feet, you have no place with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, he who has bathed needs only to wash his feet. You know, because they didn't have showers. So, otherwise, he is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you, for he knew the one who was betraying him. It was for this reason that he said, not all of you are clean. Verse 12, then when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, this is my body, which is, oh no, I'm just making that shit up. Sorry, Darren. No, this is what he actually said. Because you think, okay, now we're going to get the scene. Do you know what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are correct, for so I am. So if I, the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example so that you also would do just as I did for you. I'll go ahead and finish this out because it's just one more sentence to the paragraph, but I'm really done. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. I just want to backtrack over the thing that I think is most central to this story. For I gave you an example. In fact, just a little bit before that. So if I, the Lord, the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. In the history of the rest of the Bible, we never see a scene where the disciples are washing each other's feet. We never see a teaching about foot washing from these disciples. It doesn't happen. And yet Jesus says, you have to do it too. And he doubles down on it and says, for I gave you an example so that you also would do just as I did. This is an institution, as much of an institution as the Lord's Supper, but we don't have it. It is gone from history. We never see it done or practiced in any kind of mainstream way. We never see it written about in the rest of the entire Bible. John the liar made this shit up. Okay. Or John the truth teller told the actual story of what happened at the last Passover, and Mark made the Lord's Supper up. Because once again, the church didn't know anything about it. The church didn't know about either one of these things, right? The only time the church seemed to know anything about it was when Paul, the liar, said, hey, this is what Jesus told me, and so I'm going to pass it on to you. Isn't that interesting? I think it is. Folks, we'll talk to you again real soon. I hope you enjoyed this supplemental. I will see you in the comments. Bye-bye.